Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shares for Beginners. Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorised reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
The market could go sideways, the market could go into a slow descent, the market could keep going up for another couple of years and just keep dragging money into high-priced stocks. That could all happen as well. Or interest rates cut, earnings improve, and the market re-rates the PE based on the earnings increase. So there's a lot of things that could happen. Very hard to forecast. And greater minds than I have just called it noise, and that's what it is really, it's noise.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners. I'm Phil Muscatello. What happens when a company becomes juicy enough to attract takeover attention? How can small investors know what to do when they start receiving notices that they don't quite understand the implications of? Returning to the microphone is Tony Kynaston from QAV Investing. G'day, Tony.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks very much for coming in. Tony Kynaston leads a vibrant community of value investors who learnt his QAV system, Quality at Value, helping them to become more successful investors. But today we're going to be talking guitar and golf swings. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, before we start, turn the microphone or turn the recording device on. We were talking about guitar videos and producer videos, but now we've got to talk about the markets.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to. We can go back to talking about music if you like.
That's right.
Phil's my go-to man for guitar advice.
That's great. Well, it's good to see that you're going to get a Plec treatment on your guitar to make it easier to play. And if there's any guitarists out there, go and get a Plec treatment done. Look it up and say P-L-E-K and you'll get it. Get your guitar sounding fantastic. Back to the markets. How do you think 2024 is shaping up so far and looking ahead in the, maybe a couple of weeks in the crystal ball?
I smashed my crystal ball a long time ago, Phil.
There's no point, really, is there?
No. And if I was successful at forecasting where the market goes, I'd be talking to you from the Monaco Grand Prix or something instead. So, yeah, it just can't be done as far as I can see. The market's been doing well this year, though. If you look backwards, it's up sort of 6 or 7%. Which is pretty good.
And that's a calendar year as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, because we're only three or four months in. QAV is doing something similar to that. We keep our dummy portfolio live on our website, which tracks all our trades and applies the method so people can log on to our website and see how we're going. And quite pleased with how we've done that. We're reaching our 5th year anniversary now, and now we've been doing double market for the last 5 years, and that's really pleasing. And you said before we have a vibrant community. That's a great way to describe it.
I got it from your website.
Oh, was it? Well, I'm very proud of the community that we've got. Yeah. They're great and they're interactive and they're always throwing up curly questions and new ideas. But I think What's really exciting me at the moment is there's some amazing coders out there who are giving us some good tools. And one of the things I'm really looking forward to is we're just sort of debugging a regression testing tool, which will allow us to go back and isolate items on our checklist and see how much they contribute to our overall process and then tweak their scores and improve the process. So even though we've been doing well with what we've got, we could always, you know, look to improve. So that's exciting. Yeah.
It's interesting to say, because I asked you the crystal ball question, immediately dismissed.
Yeah.
And that's really the point, isn't it? It's like you've got to be have a strategy in place that doesn't require you to be looking at what the markets are doing.
Correct.
Every day, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the basic things to learn, isn't it?
It is. You've got to have a framework. Mm. Absolutely. And you've got to understand what sort of investor you are. So you've got to know yourself, and then that feeds into the framework, and then stick by the framework through thick and thin, really. Because if you look at the market now, both the US and Australia are trading way above their average PE ratios, which is usually a bit of a danger sign for the market. In the US, it makes sense because the top tech stocks are all well supported. There's so much investor money flying into them, particularly AI-related stocks, justifiably, I think, in some cases. But the valuations are nosebleed, as far as I can see. And once that happens, of course, the index funds are required to follow suit as well. And people who are in overseas index funds have a lot of their money diverted to it. So when the regression to the mean happens, and it always happens, that's one thing that history has taught us, the tall timbers will fall pretty heavily. So there's that. Australian market doesn't have those tech stocks, but it's still trading at a very high PE ratio. So the market average is around sort of 16 times earnings. It's now about 25 times earnings. I think that's a function of people getting excited about interest rate cuts and that the earnings will improve under a lower interest rate environment. And that's true, but the market's factoring in that interest rates will cut this year and that that will help the market. Now, what's the downside risk? Like, I like to invert things and have a look at what the other side of the coin is. And if we don't get an interest rate cut this year, that means that all the stocks are overvalued. And so it's potentially setting up for a fall. Now, having said that, I've seen this happen lots of times over the last 25 years that I've been investing. The market could go sideways, the market could go into a slow descent, the market could keep going up for another couple of years and just keep dragging money into high-priced stocks. That could all happen as well. Or interest rates cut, earnings improve, and the market re-rates the PE based on the earnings increase. So there's a lot of things that could happen. Very hard to forecast. And greater minds than I have just called it noise, and that's what it is really, it's noise.
Mm. What about even if there's a disaster? I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people and I've just been finding out about a thing called the carry trade.
Yep.
That occurs between mm-hmm. Japan. Well, this is to do with currencies, interest rates between Japan and the USA. And if, for example, Japan starts ditching their US treasuries, I believe that's could be the implication. No, you're not looking convinced about that?
No, well, I don't know much about it. But the first time I encountered the carry trade was when Australian interest rates were higher than the rest of the world. And they used to have the classic example of Japanese housewives who would borrow for next to nothing in Japan, invest over in Australia in a bond or even a savings account, and bank the 3 or 4% difference in those interest rates year in, year out.
Which is what's been happening with the US and Japan.
Right.
I think there's money managers who've been buying
yeah.
Japan treasuries. I'm not even sure what the term is, you know.
Right.
And if Japan suddenly aggressively raises interest rates,
mm-hmm.
it can have quite an effect on US Treasury markets, I believe.
No,
I'm not an expert here.
I'm not an expert either. And it could, because Japan has had very low interest rates for a long time because it's been basically in a deflationary environment. But they did raise rates for the first time in, going to say, 20 years.
To 0.05%.
Yeah, so it's still pretty low. But yeah, obviously, if Japan raises interest rates and that arbitrage, which is what it is, becomes less attractive, then it will unwind. And so there will be selling of US treasuries for sure.
Mm, and that could be a disaster, apparently.
I don't know about a disaster.
Mm.
It could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I love your sanguinity.
There's plenty of other disasters that could happen. That's the hard part about forecasting.
Well,
it's always
right.
the black swan event.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah. Iran.
Iran and Israel could go to war. Mm-hmm. Ukraine could flare up again, or anything else could happen in the world. And again, you've just got to be aware that those things happen.
Mm.
If you look at the history of the last sort of 20, 30 years in the stock market, every couple of years there's a downturn caused by some kind of catastrophe somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, tech crashes, Asian financial crises, long-term capital management going broke, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, dot-com, Gulf War. they always happen and they always affect the market. So you've just got to sort of factor into your thinking that it's going to happen. And you know, you don't want to panic when it happens. And it might actually turn out to be an opportunity as well.
Mm. Okay, so I know also we're talking about things we have no expertise in, or very little expertise in. So takeovers and mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. Now, this is inspired by a question from listener Stuart. G'day, Stuart. So Stuart wrote, "Hello, I'd like to know what happens to shares during an acquisition and what happens if a shareholder elects to take stock in the new company, especially if the new company is unlisted." And I've done a bit of an investigation to see what that is. CVC, I believe, is...
CVC were. They've walked away.
And they've walked away, so it could be a bit out of date. Yeah,
Dearborn Madison, yeah.
For a more exact reference, I'm looking at ASX code APM. Any info along these lines would be appreciated. Thanks for the question, Stuart. So, what do you know about this company, and do you have any thoughts on the current takeover manoeuvrings?
I'm not familiar with the company. I did do a bit of research before I came in to talk to you about it, though.
Yeah.
So, I had a look at the numbers for APM to start off with. APM is a services company that provides support for people who are looking for jobs. So, they will give you skills to apply for jobs. They'll help you find jobs, etc. But they also do providing services to people who need testing to go into an aged care facility or testing for the ability to receive NDIS payments, that kind of thing. And they also run corporate health and wellness programs. So they're in that kind of human services area. Their numbers look good from a QAV point of view, which basically means lots of cash, steady cash flows, and their debt's under control, if I can summarise it very quickly like that. But the sentiment's been against them. So they listed back in September 22 at $3.55, they dropped to $3.38. They got as low as 54 cents earlier this year, and they've been boosted by some takeover activity up to $1.21, roughly, which is where it was a day or so ago when I had a look. So sentiment's been down, so that would be something I wouldn't invest in because of that reason. Generally, if sentiment's going down but the numbers look good from a financial point of view, analysts are forecasting that the future isn't going to be rosy. Management called out recently that the employment side of their business, helping people get jobs, was struggling a little bit because we're basically in close to a full employment economy. But they did call out in response to takeover initiatives that they thought that they were forecasting a growth in earnings next year. So from a fundamental point of view, the company doesn't look too bad. To me, that's backed up by the fact that, as you said before, CVC, a private equity fund, have launched a bid. They actually walked away last week. But another company called Dearborn Madison have stepped up, and they've put an offer on the table of $1.40 for these shares, so slightly above where they're trading now. Dearborn Madison are actually a large shareholder in this company, so they own, I think, they hold 29% of the company.
Yeah, they own a lot, don't they? Yeah. So they do have a lot of power to affect their decisions.
Do.
Yeah.
I suspect, as I say, I don't know this company, but I suspect CVC walked away because they couldn't convince Dearborn Madison to sell to them. Would be one of the reasons why I think they gave up. It's never a good sign when someone lobs a bid and then has due diligence and then decides to walk away, but it's potentially because they couldn't convince the cornerstone shareholder to accept. The cornerstone shareholder is now launching a bid to take the company private. So getting back to Stuart's question, the offer that Dearborn Madison are making is $1.40 a share, either in cash or roll over into one of their unlisted funds, which is in the US too. So a couple of issues there. If it was me, I would always take the cash and move on to the next stock to buy. Not saying Dearborn Madison aren't running a good fund and that could be a great investment. But you're in an unlisted fund, and I'm not familiar with Dearborn Madison's unlisted funds, and I couldn't find anything from a quick review of their website that talked about how they let people redeem. That's the critical issue here, is how do you get your money out of the fund at some stage in the future? So it's a private equity company, and they will have redemption rules. Sometimes private equity companies will say you're tying up your capital for a certain period of time, 3 years, 5 years, 1 year, whatever, and or you can only redeem on certain dates. So it's important to know what you're getting into there. As I said, I couldn't see it on their website. I suspect that they will provide a scheme of arrangement, which will mean that they'll have to do a detailed report on their fund and how you get to redeem out of it, etc. If they don't, and Stuart still wants to consider that, then he could perhaps email Dearborn Madison and ask them how he could redeem out of their fund. That's this particular example.
Yep, and this is general advice only.
This is general advice only. Yeah, I'm not telling Stuart what to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so if a takeover company in general was saying, we're going to take the company over and take it private, then and it's not part of a traded fund, which happens, then you're stuck with the shares in an unlisted company. And you
can't, it can be very hard to get trade money out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to wait for an event to happen, like that private company sold or taken over by someone else before you have a chance to get your money out. So it is a concern. The other concern that Stuart might want to consider is that Diebold Madison is a US company. So there's always going to be taxation issues, and I can't give tax advice here. Stuart should talk to his accountant, but also currency risk as well. So if the Australian dollar changes versus the US dollar, that will affect the value of what you have invested too. And those two things you don't have while it's still listed, while this company is still listed in Australia.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah.
Super is one of the most important investments you'll ever make. But how do you know if you're in the best fund for your situation? Head to lifesherpa.com.au to find out more. Life Sherpa. Australia's most affordable online financial advice.
And that kind of speaks to the situation where suddenly, you know, you've bought some shares in a company and you think, okay, everything's going fine. And then suddenly you get that letter or the email.
Yeah.
And you've given this offer, and it's very hard sometimes to unpick, you know, how useful it can be. One thing I would suggest is joining the Australian Shareholders Association, mm-hmm. because you can talk to people there, mm-hmm. quite easily about it as well. But like if you were a beginner investor and suddenly you got one of these letters saying there's a, you know, a 2-for-3 share offer or a takeover or something like that, what steps would you take to understand it better?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I think doing a simple Google search to find out what's going on is probably the first start. If you're not keeping up to date with financial press or keeping up to date with alerts from the company, that's a good way to start. But yeah, I think there are kind of basic situations which experience teaches you and basic approaches to these kinds of situations. And so maybe if I step back and talk about the general way that companies are acquired, there's basically the old-fashioned way, which is a hostile bid, which this doesn't appear to be the case with APM.
It's not the 80s anymore.
And that's right. And that's probably the image that people have in their minds of share raiders, swashbuckling share raiders launching bids, and the board doesn't approve of that. And, you know, there's a bidding war could potentially break out, all that kind of thing. So that's kind of the old way of taking over companies. It can still happen. But what that requires normally is that for the takeover to go ahead, the company needs 90% of shareholders to vote in favour of the bidder. And that's a difficult threshold to achieve normally. It often means that the bidder will launch a bid, but then at some stage they'll increase the price to try and mop up enough acceptances to get to 90%. It also means that they're oftentimes fighting the board. So the board will adopt what's called a takeover defence. And so they might sell parts of the company to try and unlock some value. They might demerge part of the company to unlock some value. They might pay down debt, take on more debt to make the company less attractive to a takeover target. So there are all sorts of things a board can do. They will probably at some stage commission an independent valuation of the company. And if it's a hostile bid, surprise, surprise, usually that valuation says the bid is undervaluing the company. If it's a scheme of arrangement, then it's often in the fair value range because the boards engage with the process. So that leads me to the second way that acquirers normally approach boards now is with the view to forming a scheme of arrangement. And what that means is that you don't need 90% acceptance to take over the company. You need 75% of a shareholder vote. 50% of shareholders who voted to get the deal across. Normally, well, you do need the board to be in favour of the bid, and then the board actually engages with the acquirer and they come up with a suitable arrangement and put it in paper. A scheme of arrangement needs court approval to go out, to be voted on, and then court approval once the votes happen to make sure that everything's above board. And it does require ASIC to agree to it as well. So it's a scheme of arrangement, even though it's a lower threshold, it requires a longer time period to acquire a company. So having said all that, you want to check where the share price is compared to the bid price. And so at the moment for APM, the share price is a bit below the bid price, and that usually indicates that the market's a bit sceptical about whether the bid will go ahead or not. And so then you've got to form the view of, well, do I want to sell the shares now, in APM's case, at $1.20-ish when the bid's at $1.40, or do I want to see if the scheme goes through? And you've got some time to wait for that, and even until the scheme document comes out, which you can read and form your opinion. The risk is that if it doesn't progress very far and the bidder walks away, then the share price will drop from $1.20, and it was as low as 50-something cents at the start of the year before bids started appearing. So it could drop all that way. So the way I operate in takeover situations, and it probably happens to me once or twice a year, because if I see value in buying a company's shares, then chances are expert fund manager is going to see value there as well and launch a bid. So it's happening at the moment with a company called ASB, Austal Shipbuilders.
Which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so they're on our buy list. And I will tend to adopt the approach of, let's see where the share price is compared to the bid. If I'm not happy to accept the script in the new acquiring company or to have the company delisted and taken private, I'll probably sell my shares at that price.
Because you have the opportunity to
take the market's
the cash
still open. Yeah. So what's the risk? If I sell now and there's a second bidder, the price might go up. But as Daniel Kahneman, RIP, said, I get less of a high out of missing out on an opportunity than I do compared to the low I get if the bidder walks away and the shares drop. So a loss always hurts more than the upside wins. Generally, in a scheme of arrangement, if a company has arrived at the point of view of making the offer, going to a scheme, the board's accepted it, it's pretty hard for another bidder to come in and upset that apple cart. So you're unlikely to get a better offer than that. And if the share price is trading at that offer or near that offer, then I'd normally sell my shares and take the cash and walk away and invest somewhere else. And there are people out there who play the arbitrage game. If the share price is 5 cents below the bid price, they'll buy your shares and they'll make the 5 cents and wait the 2 or 3 months for it to go through, and that's how they make their money. That's fine. So there's still a market operating for those shares. If it's an open hostile bid, I would normally wait a little bit, because generally the first bid isn't the final bid and the bid will have to be increased. And so I'd be waiting for at least a second bid to come through. But certainly if it got to the stage where the board went through all of their defence, had the independent report come back, the independent report says, yeah, it's fair value, the board then recommends shareholders take the bid, then I will probably still sell on the market, but the price should be pretty close to the bid price at that stage.
And somewhere in between one of these friendly bids and a hostile bid, there's also activist investors who will come in and try and change the way the company is run, because they can see the value in the company.
Yeah.
And this is not hostile in a sense. And we don't have a lot of that here in Australia. There's a lot more of that in the United States. But the example I was speaking to a guest with recently was EML Payments. And they had a Texas-based activist investor who basically had the management and the board changed, and suddenly it's become a reasonable stock again.
Right. Yeah, look, that's another way for a change to happen in a company if someone sees value and then they don't want to launch a bid. It is reasonably rare in Australia, certainly not as high profile as it is in the States. I'm not sure why that is. It potentially because of regulations.
Oh, it's just a smaller market. There seems to be a bit of a dance of directors going between companies as well.
I'm thinking about what would be a good example in Australia. I'm thinking about Boral. So Seven Group bought a stake in Boral and did a lot of work in replacing management and taking board seats, and now are offering to take that company over, or to complete a takeover, because there are all sorts of regulations about taking over companies. So, for example, in Boral's case, it's a rule that if you have a 19.5% shareholding, if you go above that, you've got to launch a bid for the company. If you stay at that 19.5%, you're allowed to creep 3% every 6 months, so you can sort of slowly build up into the register. And so people like Kerry Stokes, has been around for a long time doing this, will play those rules to their advantage. And eventually got to the stage where they had quite a large shareholding in Boral, and there's only 30 or 40% of individual independent shareholders now in the company. And they're faced with a decision about whether they want to roll over or accept an offer from Seven for Boral.
Anyway, let's move on to ASB, Austal. And we'll just put in a little musical reference, that great song by Elvis Costello, Shipbuilding, which we're going to be talking about. What a great song.
It is.
So you've talked about ASB recently. And It's an interesting one because, coincidentally, it's been subject to a takeover bid. Tell us about Austal and the Korean company lobbing this bid.
Yep. So Austal is a shipbuilder and been around for 20-odd years or about that. And it operates out of Perth, although they have, I think, 7 shipbuilding centres around the world now. Started off pioneering the use of aluminium in shipbuilding. And if anyone's been on a Harbour Cat ferry or a catamaran type ferry, they pioneered that design, which has produced a very stable way of cruising through ferry. I came across Austal when I was going from Airlie Beach across to Hamilton Island. It was one of the first places I encountered a catamaran ferry, and it was just so much smoother than taking a single-hulled vessel across a body of water. And so they pioneered that. They eventually grew big enough to attract attention from the US Navy, and so they started to make dual-hulled catamaran, like they're called littoral combat vessels, littoral, which means that they stay above inside the continental shelf around a country. And again, incredibly smooth ships for the US Navy.
Presumably it makes it a lot easier to take aim with your guns.
Yes, you'd think so, yeah. So they're doing lots of work for the US Navy, but they still produce large ferries around the world as well. They've got Australian Defence Force work for the Navy here to replace all the coastal patrol boats for the Australian Navy. So big shipbuilding company, pioneering work, Australian success story really, but have attracted the attention of Hanwha. And Hanwha recently took over Daewoo, which is a Korean shipbuilding company. And so they want to roll Austal into that and get economies of scale from that. However, in this case, the board's response to the offer was to point out you'll need both Australian government approval and US Navy approval, US government approval, because we have contracts with both of those governments and they have to approve a change of shareholding. You may or may not get that. They also...
added level of complexity, isn't it?
Well, the additional level of complexity is the shareholding of Austal. So the original founder still has some 9%, a guy called John Rothwell. He sits on the board still. But also a company called Tatarang, which you may know as Twiggy Forrest's personal investment vehicle. They hold 19-odd percent too. So something like 27, 28% of the company is held by 2 shareholders, and any bidder is going to have to convince them to sell. And Twiggy Forrest is on the record saying he won't sell to an overseas company. Now, everyone has a price. Currently, the price isn't floating their boat, so to speak, but it may in the future. But yeah, I personally think Hanwha has their work cut out for them, achieving approvals and convincing the current shareholders to sell to an overseas company.
Oh, interesting.
And the market thinks that too, because I think the bid was something like $2.82 and the price is about $2.40 at the moment.
So they don't think it's going to get through to that price.
Some do, because the share price went up 10% when the bid was launched. But yeah, I think cooler heads are saying, let's wait and see.
But there obviously would be some people going, oh, if that bid gets through, I'm going to make that 40 cents difference in the...
Correct, yeah.
So some people would be taking that. But that's not a game for amateurs, is it?
Well, it's true. I think so. There are people who specialise in the arbitraging takeover situations, and they'll be working out the odds of the bid going through and whether getting 40 cents a share is worth it for sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's focus back on the vibrant community of investors at QAV. Again, we've got deals if you use the promo code SFB for the full version of QAV or SFB Lite. You can get a significant discount on joining up and becoming one of the members of this vibrant community. Mm. Just tell us a little bit more. Give us a little bit of the sales spiel.
The sales spiel, yeah. So QAV is a process and it uses fundamental analysis. So we use the publicly available financial reports for
and
these
it's
companies.
Quality at value.
QAV stands for quality at value. So what we're trying to do is classic value investing. We're ranking it using a checklist of scores. We're ranking the quality of a company. So is there lots of cash? Is there little debt? How good the management, that kind of thing. And then we're seeing whether it's a fair price to buy the company. We use a bit of sentiment, so we look to see if there's a bit of market support for it. Because one of the classic issues with value investing is a company can look cheap and it's cheap for a reason. And the share price just keeps going down and you're just trying to catch a falling knife, which is never pleasant or easy. So we look to see sentiment turn or going up before we invest. And there's plenty of stocks out there which are doing that but still cheap. And if you join the full QAV membership, then you'll get access to the checklist, to the community, ask questions on our podcast. We do a podcast every week where we talk about our companies, what's going on in the market, and answer questions from listeners. Or you can join QAV Lite, which is a lower cost, and we publish once a week what our buy list is, and we set up some dummy portfolios and show what their trades are. And you can choose to follow those if you like, or you can use that as a resource to guide you on your investing journey.
Oh, fantastic. So again, those codes are SFB for the full version and SFB Lite for the light version.
Yeah.
With the full version, you also need a Stock Doctor subscription as well?
Yeah, we recommend that. So that's a good data provider that feeds into our checklist and makes everything a lot easier than manually trying to find the data yourself from company reports.
Mm, yeah. Oh, well, it's a better way than, you know, depending on newsletters and so forth.
Yeah, I think Stock Doctor's a fantastic tool.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got all the company information going back years at your fingertips, really, which you can slice and dice. They do financial health scoring for us as well. And for people who use Stock Doctor, it's a terrific tool.
And this vibrant community will let you know if you've got any wrong-headed ideas.
Yes, that's
pretty
right.
Quickly, won't they?
Yeah, well, it may or may not be Stock Doctor's fault, but there are occasionally data corruption issues from their provider. So, yeah, it gets picked up pretty quickly.
Yeah. So tell us about the SG guitar. So your favourite guitar is the SG guitar, which, let's see, Angus Young from ACDC, Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. Who else was there?
I can only think of Angus.
Yeah.
That's who I focused on when I bought it.
You were just trying to channel Angus, were you?
trying to channel Angus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that classic horned look around the neck from the body. Phil and I were talking before about I've got a Yamaha acoustic as well, and I'm finding difficulty getting back into it to play the chords I need to because it's a much wider neck and higher strings compared to the Gibson SG, which I just seem to fly over with the fretboard.
Yeah, but you can get lost in all of this as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've been watching videos, and Tommy Emmanuel, who's a fantastic guitarist, but he uses strings that on his acoustic that are so heavy, you would never be able to get them down. But he's just obviously got the strength and flexibility of playing for years and years and years. He's incredible. Have you ever seen Tommy Emmanuel live?
I have, actually.
Amazing.
A long time ago up at the Gold Coast Jazz Festival. Yeah.
Mm. Amazing, isn't he?
Yeah.
That version of classical gas that he does.
Right.
Mind-bending. Tony Kynaston, I'll let you go and get back onto your guitar.
Get it plecked, yes.
Yeah, get it plecked. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.